Good morning. We gather with Jesus in the upper room for this Holy Week chapel, an invitation to come and receive bread and receive the cup in remembrance of Jesus as he gathered with his disciples for what became, he knew it, but they didn't, the Last Supper together. We've often served communion, what many Christians understand as Holy Communion, the Lord's Supper, at our Holy Week Chapel. But it dawned on us this year, mostly because of the gift of having Rabbi Niles Goldstein with us this semester as visiting scholar with the Center for Interfaith Engagement, that we may do well to step back a moment from invitation to the table in the ways of Jesus and ask ourselves, what was the Last Supper of Jesus? So an invitation to table will come later, but in the context that will be set in just a few minutes. Niles Goldstein will bring the teaching on the best understanding from Jewish scholarship on what was the Last Supper of Jesus. Niles Elliott Goldstein is the founder and rabbi emeritus of the New Shul, an innovative and independent congregation in Greenwich Village, New York City. He lectures widely on religion and spirituality and has taught at New York University and the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion. Goldstein is the national Jewish chaplain for the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, a member of PEN and the Renaissance Institute, and was the voice behind Ask the Rabbi on Microsoft Network. That sounds a bit like Who Are the Mennonites at Menno Media, right? His essays, op-ed pieces, and poetry have appeared in Newsweek, the Los Angeles Times, Newsday, and many other publications. And he is the award-winning author or editor of 8 previous books. 2 of the books are available for sale in the foyer. One of them is this one, The Challenge of the Soul, A Guide for the Spiritual Warrior, and the other one, God at the Edge, Searching for the Divine in Uncomfortable and Unexpected Places. Sounds a little bit like EMU's cross-cultural experiences, at least what happens for many students in those settings. Goldstein has been featured in Time, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Christian Science Monitor, the New York Observer, New York Magazine, Real Simple, and this one surprised me a bit, Glamour, as well as on national and international television and radio such as Dateline, CNN, MSNBC, NPR, Voice of America, and the BBC. He currently resides, when he's not, at EMU in Harrisonburg, Virginia, in Chicago, and we welcome you to bring the teaching today.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for that introduction. Thank all of you for welcoming me, not just today, not just this morning at chapel, but all semester long, where I've taught 2 courses and done other things through the Center for Interfaith Engagement. This is a wonderful and welcoming community. You have made me feel very much at home, and I wish all of you a wonderful Holy Week. It's particularly an honor for me to be able to speak to you a little bit this morning during Holy Week about Passover. So what was the Last Supper? What did Jesus do? What did Jesus eat for the Last Supper? I will dispel any surprises by giving you a very short answer. We don't know. We don't know what exactly constituted Jesus' Last Supper. But what we do know is that 2,000 years ago, as a young Jewish man living in the ancient Near East, in that place at that time, he would have known certain things about Passover observance in the Jewish context. He would have known, for example, that in the Bible, there are 3 specific commandments, 3 specific practices related to Passover that were considered obligatory, and only 3. One was the eating of matzah, the eating of unleavened bread, to commemorate the idea that once the Israelites were freed from the land of Egypt, from Pharaoh, from the house of bondage, they still had to flee. They still had to make haste. There was not time for them to wait to have their bread rise. So to this day, we do not eat bread during the Passover period, and today is the second day of Passover that has leavening agents in it. It's a flat, hard piece of bread that we eat to remember the haste with which the Israelites fled Egypt. That is the first thing that the Bible refers to as being an obligatory commandment. Jesus certainly would have known about that, and he might very well have eaten matzah as part of his Last Supper, because Passover occurs at this time. Easter is 4 days away. Passover always occurs at the same time that Easter does, more or less. And matzah would have almost certainly been something that Jesus would have been well aware of. Maror, bitter herbs, the second of the three elements of Passover observance that Jesus would have known about. The eating of bitter herbs was meant to remind people of the embitterness, the pain, the suffering that would have been experienced by Israelites in bondage. Jesus would have certainly known about maror, or about bitter herbs, which were eaten sometimes with the matzah, sometimes separately, but always in commemoration of Passover. And then finally, Pesach, the Paschal lamb, the offering, the special offering that was instituted to commemorate the observance of Passover. This would have been observed at the temple in Jerusalem, given to the priests and the Levites, and then partaken of by individual families during their pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Would Jesus have known about the Paschal lamb, about the offering at the temple? He certainly would have. Would he have participated in that ritual? Well, in light of what he says about temple observance, I don't know, but it certainly would have been something that permeated the culture of that time. So these three elements of Passover observance, the unleavened bread, matzah, the bitter herbs, maror, and the Paschal lamb, the offering at the temple, Pesach, would have all been very familiar to Jesus in his time. Were they part of the Last Supper? We just don't know. What we know for sure is that elements that were handed down to later generations that I observed just last night at a Passover Seder here in Harrisonburg at JMU would not have been known to Jesus because they were not created. They were not invented yet during his lifetime. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that right now. One of them is the liturgy. We have a book here known as the Haggadah. It says, Haggadah Shel Pesach. Haggadah in Hebrew means the telling. Lehagid is to tell. Haggadah is the telling. This is our master narrative of the Passover experience. And this special liturgy was certainly written after the lifetime of Jesus. So he would not have known about the Haggadah, about this special liturgy that was created later by rabbis, written in Aramaic in certain sections, in Hebrew in others, codified in those first few centuries after the death of Jesus. But it is something that was handed down to us. He would not have known about this in the form that it's been handed down, but it is something critically important to Passover observance today, and something that has gone above and beyond those three biblical practices, commandments, that I mentioned a little bit earlier. Paschal lamb, matzah, and bitter herbs. So I'm just going to read three brief passages to give you a taste, no pun intended, about what the Passover meal has looked like over the centuries since Jesus has died. This first one, Halach Ma'anya, occurs very early in the Passover Seder. It's written in Aramaic, and I'll just read the first line in Aramaic and then the translation in English. Halach Ma'anya diachlu avatanya ba'ara de Mitzrayim. Sounds a little bit like Hebrew, but it's really not Hebrew. It's a very different language. Many scholars think Jesus would have perhaps spoken this in addition to other languages he may have known as well. Behold, this is the bread of affliction. They're talking about the matzah here. And during the Seder, you lift up the matzah at this point. This is the bread of affliction, the poor bread, which our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat. Let all who are in want share the hope of Passover. As we celebrate here, we join with our people everywhere. This year we celebrate here, next year in the land of Israel. Now we are still in bonds. Next year, may we be free. So this first blessing is, in essence, an invitation for others to join us. And to this day, those people who hold Passover seders, Passover commemorations in their homes, traditionally invite others, not just family, but friends, strangers, neighbors, Jew and Gentile, into their homes. There's a social justice element to this very first blessing, this idea of equity. Let all who are hungry come and eat. We share the bread of affliction, the unleavened bread, the matzah, and we share it with others, especially those who have nowhere to go. As I did last night, I was invited as a stranger to this Passover commemoration. And traditionally that is done all over the world. So the first liturgical addition that Jesus would not have known about is Halach Ma'anya, behold the bread of affliction, this social justice, equity-oriented, very important passage. The next one, which is more educational in nature, is called Manishtana. And this also occurs relatively early in the Passover Seder. And it goes in Hebrew now, not Aramaic, so our languages change now. Manishtana halayla hazem mikol halaylot. It's a question. Why is this night different from all other nights? Judaism follows a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar. So the new moon that we observed Monday night, and then again last night, starts the Passover Seder. So why is this night different from all other nights? It's a question. And then here come the answers. Why is this night different from all other nights? On all other nights, we eat leavened bread or matzah, unleavened bread. On this night, only matzah, as the Bible commands us. On all other nights, we eat all kinds of herbs. On this night, we especially eat bitter herbs. On all other nights, we do not dip herbs at all. On this night, we dip them twice. There are two occasions in the Seder where we actually dip herbs into salt water. On all other nights, we eat in an ordinary manner. Tonight, we dine with special ceremony. There's a tradition in the Passover Seder of reclining to the left, which in Hellenistic times was a sign of relaxation. That is what free people did, not people who were enslaved. So all of these are differences between the Passover meal and other meals during the rest of the year. Many scholars think the Passover meal was designed very specifically on the Greek symposium, this kind of educational or pedagogic meal that was part of Hellenistic culture. Again, something Jesus would probably not have been familiar with by the time this came out, but something that was in the air in that time. Something noteworthy about this section in the liturgy is it's in Hebrew, not in Aramaic. It has a pedagogic component to it. It's teaching. Why is this night different from all other nights? And we get answers. It is not aspirational. It is not prayerful as Halach Ma'anya was. That was focused on equity, on justice. This is focused on teaching the meaning of what the Seder might have been. So the Seder itself is something that really is focused on many levels. It's meant to touch us in our hearts and in our souls. It's also meant to touch us in our heads. It's meant to teach us so we learn about this experience. And I want to read one more section from the Passover Seder that comes right before the meal. And this is called Avadim Hayinu. We're going back to Hebrew again. Avadim Hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. Note the use of the word we, not they. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and God freed us from Egypt with a mighty hand. Had not the Holy One, praise be He, delivered our people from Egypt, then we, our children, and our children's children would still be enslaved. So there is this idea that the Passover Seder is a sacred drama. It is something that is mystical in its orientation. We're not talking about them. We're not talking about our ancient ancestors. We're talking about ourselves, about us, in a kind of mystical way. God did not free our ancestors from Egypt. God frees us from Egypt at this time. God liberates us from bondage. God redeems us from those narrow places, those places in our lives that enslave us. Poverty, addiction, suffering, pain, dark forces within us that hold us back. This is not a one-time event. This is an event that happens every year at this time for all peoples, Jew and Gentile, in its messianic, in its universal focus. And like any good drama, there are elements of theater. We have a script. We have the Haggadah, the Passover Haggadah, with all of these different liturgical insertions. We have the Seder plate, which I'm going to explain briefly, very quickly, in a moment, with different ritual items on top of it. We have a cup, a chalice, a kiddush cup, a cup where we sanctify wine and drink it four times during the course of the Seder. So all of these elements of deep drama are part of the Passover Seder. This is not something that other people observed. This is something that we ourselves observed. Would Jesus have done this as part of his Last Supper in some way, shape, or form? Even if the Seder plate, the Kiddush cup, the Haggadah script were not part of what he would have known about, were other elements present at his time? It's very possible. We don't know. So let me turn quickly as I close today to talk about the Seder plate. I don't have the actual objects on it, but I can explain what they are. And this plate is a very decorative plate, and if you look at them in museums all over the world, some of them are quite beautiful. They can be ceramic, they can be silver, they can be made out of any kind of material, actually. But there are six spaces on it for six different food items. The Seder is a ritual meal. It's not a Last Supper in the Jewish context. I would argue it's a First Supper. It is a time when we are reborn, when we are freed, when we are liberated each and every year at this time. So it's not a Last Supper for Jews, it's a First Supper to really start the year off again, at least at this point, in a spiritually elevated way. So Passover, Pesach is the word in the middle. We have reference to maror at the top, and traditionally you would have horseradish, some kind of bitter herb here. It doesn't have to be horseradish, but that's a tradition we did last night, we did Monday, that is often done, and the horseradish would sit here symbolically to remember the bitterness of Egypt, which I referred to earlier, and which is present in the biblical injunction as well. We have an egg, something that was not part of what would have been going on during Jesus' time, but the egg is meant to symbolize fertility. It's meant to symbolize rebirth. Very important themes of Passover. So an egg would sit on top of this. Parsley and lettuce. Again, it could be any kind of green vegetable. Traditionally, it's parsley and lettuce. They are dipped during different parts of the Seder ceremony. They are meant to represent the harvest time. I lived in Jerusalem for 2 years. This time of year in the spring is a time of harvest. So the rebirth theme connects to harvest and not just the liberation from bondage in Egypt. So we have two green vegetables to represent the harvest. Charoset, it's a delicious mixture of something sweet and something less sweet, more bland, usually apples and nuts that are ground together, mixed with honey and other ingredients sometimes, that literally look like the mortar that was used, that the Israelites might have had to use when they were constructing pyramids for the Egyptians. So there's this idea that the foods we eat are meant to bring us back to that time. So charoset is something we eat with the bitter herbs, with the matzah, and when it is mixed and ground together, it actually looks like mortar, the mortar that might have been used that on the one hand embittered their lives as they were constructing brick upon brick upon brick, as they were slaves under Pharaoh, but which we now, as a celebration, because God has transformed what was once bondage and bitterness into something that is now liberation and redemption and celebration into something good, something sweet, something joyous. And finally, the shank bone, the Pesach, the Paschal lamb that I mentioned, that at one time was an actual offering made at the temple that Jesus certainly would have known about. Whether he would have participated in that practice, we don't know. I'm not aware of any specific reference to that in the Gospels. I'm not a scholar of the Gospels, but I'm not aware of that. But symbolically, after the fact, over these many centuries, over these 2,000 years, we put a shank bone on this Seder plate to represent the symbolism of that sacrifice. Even though there is no more temple, even though there is no more viable priesthood, even though we do not make pilgrimages to Jerusalem anymore and offer a Paschal lamb sacrifice, symbolically we do this to remember that part of our life. And then finally, the Kiddush cup that I referred to earlier. We drink from this four different times during the Passover Seder, two times before the meal and two times after the meal. And there is often a fifth cup, a cup dedicated to Elijah, where we open the door and welcome the spirit of Elijah into our Seder. Elijah is often present during joyous celebratory times in Jewish history. When a child, a young boy, is circumcised, the Passover Seder, other times. Elijah really represents, in many ways, the harbinger of the Messianic era. So Elijah is present here at the very end of the Passover Seder, and we leave a fifth cup filled with wine ceremonially for Elijah to drink from when he walks through the door all over the world and enters into our Seders. So these are just some elements of Passover. What would Jesus have participated in as his Last Supper? I mentioned the three elements, and the only three elements that were present in the Bible itself: bitter herbs, matzah, the Paschal lamb offering. I've tried to show many of the other ritual items and the sacred meal, the ritual drama that is part of the Seder that we've observed for two millennia ever since, that he almost certainly would not have known about. Now, would Jesus have been comfortable with the way that in some circles there has been a Christological element added to the Seder, a reinterpretation in some Christian quarters of what these symbols represent? Personally, as a rabbi and as someone who has a decent understanding of the world in which Jesus lived 2,000 years ago as a young Jewish man, I don't think he would have been comfortable with those reinterpretations. I think he probably would have been very comfortable with the historic interpretations put forward in the Bible and continued with the rabbis, recognizing the historical significance of this event for the Jewish people, but the message being a universal one, the message being a message of redemption, of rebirth, of liberation, not just for the Jewish people, but for all people, for all who are hungry, for all who are oppressed, for all who are in need of freedom. I think those messages are ones that go directly to the Bible, that Jesus would have been very familiar with, very comfortable with, very happy about, and in my view as a rabbi, probably very proud of, and teachings that he would have wanted to continue over the centuries, and I think would have been very pleased that we are continuing, each of us in our own way. Do I think Jesus would have wanted Christians to be familiar with these practices? I think absolutely. And I think the more Christians become familiar with their Jewish roots, I think the stronger you become in your identities. And I think the more opportunities you have to learn from Jews like myself about these practices, I think the better all of us become ultimately in serving God and taking care of one another. So I thank you again for your hospitality and your welcome. And I think I'm going to turn things over to Brian.
As you listen to the scripture from Luke, I'd invite you to imagine now some of what you have heard in the teaching this morning. So enter into the story that Luke tells in preparing for the Passover. Then came the day of unleavened bread, on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. So Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and prepare the Passover meal for us that we may eat it." They asked him, "Where do you want us to make preparations for it?" "Listen," he said to them, "when you have entered the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him into the house he enters and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, already furnished. Make preparations for us there." So they went and found everything as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover meal. When the hour came, he took his place at the table, and the apostles with him. He said to them, "I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer, for I tell you, I will not eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God." Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he said, "Take this and divide it among yourselves, for I tell you that from now on I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." Then he took a loaf of bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And he did the same with the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is poured out for you, is the cup of the new covenant in my blood."
Pray with me. God, we ask your blessing upon the bread and the cup. We ask your blessing upon our lives, upon our community. We ask you to add the depth of meaning as those who choose take part in the offering of bread and cup in remembrance of Jesus. Amen.